Good evening y bienvenidos a Chicago Tonight Latino Voices. I'm Alex Hernandez of Noticias Univision Chicago. We cherish every weekday morning at 5 and 6. Thank you for sharing part of your weekend with us on the show tonight. New pediatric guidelines for treating children with obesity. When should you worry about your child's weight? State Superintendent of Education Carmen Ayala is retiring. What she's learned from her nearly 40-year career in education. A proposed ordinance to protect gig workers from losing their jobs to false accusations. And a woman-inclusive gym is taking a different approach to wellness. All that coming up. But our first story tonight, advice for keeping kids healthy. That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices, is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
No secret that overall the American body is getting bigger, and that goes for kids as well. But in Chicago's Latino community, rates of childhood obesity are consistently higher than other groups. A 2020 analysis by the Chicago Department of Public Health shows Latino CPS students were significantly more likely to be overweight or obese than other demographic. Latino CPS kindergartners had an average overweight or obesity rate of nearly 39%. By ninth grade, the average rate climbs to almost 49%. Joining us now to talk about how to keep kids healthy are Dr. Geraldine Luna, Medical Director of Chicago Department of Public Health, and also Dr. Alejandro Clavier, Lead Pediatrician at Esperanza Advidia Pediatrics. Thank you both for joining us today, but I want to start with you, Dr. Luna. Is overweight or obesity a de facto concern for children? What is that based on?
Of course. And overweight, I mean, let's start by the definition very quickly. But it's any child that it's 85% over their weight for age and gender. And it's incredible, Alex, because it's associated with other comorbid conditions that overall can lead to a reduced in life expectancy when this child reaches adulthood. And we're talking about sleep apnea, early puberty, reflux, asthma, bone and joint problems. We're talking about anxiety, mental problem related to bullying and stigma, adult early onset type 2 diabetes, and adult obesity with other conditions, comorbid conditions like hypertension, heart diseases that we already know of, and cancers associated with it.
Yeah, definitely a concern for all parents. Dr. Clavier, what are the drivers of childhood obesity actually? And are there genetic or cultural factors to it, especially for Latinos?
So, yes, Alex, it's definitely a complex, it's one of the most common chronic diseases in children, and it's a complex chronic disease. There are definitely more and more known genetic factors. There's also physiologic factors, environmental factors, and socioeconomic factors that play an important role in the development of obesity, overweight and obesity.
Dr. Luna, when should parents become concerned, actually, about their children's weight? How do you start a conversation with them about it, actually?
Yes, once it's established that their child is overweight or obese, it's important to take those aggressive actions. Education about teaching healthy eating habits. It also included physical activity by age. You'd be surprised. Children that are younger are more active, require that time to be active and playing, obviously in safe spaces. And as we go aging, that necessity, physical necessity, might be defined a little bit different, but children overall need to be physically active. And you can make it a family affair. Doing things together, swimming, walking your dog, raking, those tasks that include washing the car, we can do that together. Another important thing is consistent sleep routines. There is an association of late sleepers and obesity, and we see that a lot, especially with our culture. Latino community, unfortunately, has half of that obesity alone. We're the highest race with obesity, childhood obesity. And then turning screens into effective family time, taking away those screens when they're sleeping, improves not only the sleep quality, but improves also grades at school, helps increase physical activity and things that family can do together. So we need those essential structural changes and shape of the environment to
Dr. Clavier, what do you think? How can parents actually help their children keep their bodies healthy without actually harming their self-esteem or putting them at risk of an eating disorder?
Sure. And that's why it's a complex disease, Alex, because there are things that we could kind of control and things that are completely out of our controls. I think things that we can control as parents are parent feeding time, as an example, parents eating together as a family, modeling healthy feedings of half of the plate, fruits and vegetables, in the table when you eat. One thing that is associated with obesity is increased consumption of sugary drinks like sodas and juices. So drinking water as opposed to sugary drinks, drinking fruit as opposed to fruit juices, that drinking water would be a significant shift that we could do at home to help our kids have a healthier weight. Talk about portion size. There's a national guideline called My Great Plate, and it can give an idea of what a good, healthy portion size should be. So I think that could be a good idea. Snacking, healthy snacking, controlling screen time for our kids and being more outside would be very important. And try to avoid eating outside, especially fast food, and trying to eat at home. Those are things that we could control.
It sounds tough. It sounds tough, especially taking juices away from kids and just, you know, having them drink water. It sounds like a tough order, but it's important to do to avoid obesity in children. Dr. Luna, how can the city and institutions help children maintain a healthy weight?
Well, incredibly, as we speak, Healthy Chicago Movement right now, it's CDPH, for example, focusing on bringing together community and healthcare system partners in advancing policy, system changes and environmental changes that are important to fight this childhood obesity. CDPA has prepared, it's working with a consortium to lower obesity in Chicago children, which what they do together is increase access to health, healthy food, physical activity, improving neighborhood walkability, walking with community members to improve community design to make those safe spaces where children can have fun together in a safe environment, all together working with the community. We have a recipe for healthy places in which Chicago, the city, is planning food. And when we're talking about school systems, CPS now has healthy CPS initiatives that have that's the strongest and most robust program for K-12 in terms of food policies and physical activity, including after-hour programs for our children.
There's definitely a lot that can be done to help our children. Dr. Luna, Dr. Clavier, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Rideshare and delivery drivers are calling for an ordinance that guarantees their right to appeal before being permanently kicked off the app they use for their jobs. As we know, the proposed city ordinance would offer a means for deactivated drivers to tell their side of the story and recoup lost income if they were found to be unfairly deactivated. Former Uber driver Lenny Sanchez says, as a victim of a false accusation himself, he hopes to see this ordinance cross the finish line.
I picked up a passenger, everything's pleasant, the ride is proceeding, and I hear a can beverage open, that famous sound. I look in my rearview mirror, and the gentleman is drinking a beer. And I very politely, in the same tone as I'm talking to you guys, I'm like, hey, buddy, I, you know, can't have a beer while I'm driving. And he finished his beer and we proceeded. Friendly ride concludes after I drop him off. Several minutes pass and I get a phone call from Uber asking me why I had fled the scene of an accident that the last passenger had called in that reported that I was involved in a collision with another car and fled that scene. And they're going to have to go through the insurance process with the adjuster and upload video and pictures to prove your vehicle is in proper operating condition. So I had to go through that process. And in the meantime, I lost several days of potential work time. So I had recourse because of this insurance process that I had to go through. But if I would have been accused of driving under the influence or anything else, the algorithm will automatically deactivate us, and there is no way for us to appeal these deactivations. And there's some bad actors that are out there, people that are taking advantage of this system so that they can get a free ride or a free meal. And then those actions end up resulting in us losing our jobs. And it's devastating. I've personally met hundreds of drivers that have been deactivated unfairly because of false claims. And there's tens of thousands of workers in the Chicagoland area that have been unfairly deactivated from these apps. This is something that is ready and very easy for the city council to pass, and it just makes a lot of common sense. So I'm very confident, despite the timeline and some of those challenges that it might pose, that this will pass.
We'll definitely keep you up to date on the status of that ordinance. Up next, one-on-one with the state's outgoing superintendent of education. Stay with us. State Superintendent of Education Carmen Ayala is retiring with a career in education spanning nearly 40 years. She's both the first woman and person of color to hold the position as a state top education official. It's a role that oversees more than 850 school districts serving 2 million students, with much of it recently spent navigating an unprecedented pandemic. Joining us now with more is State Superintendent of Education, Carmen Ayala. Superintendent, thank you for joining us today. You were 1 year into the job when the pandemic hit. What was the most difficult part? How were things back then?
Wow. Who could have thought, right, that we would be facing a pandemic? You know, I think the most important thing was getting our schools ready to be in remote status. Never did we imagine that that remote status was going to continue to finish the school year, let alone also be, you know, having students in remote status the next year. So shifting to remote status was probably the biggest, wow, we've got to move fast.
Definitely. And we know during the pandemic, there was some learning loss, not just academics, but also social emotional learning that occurred during the pandemic. What are schools doing now to make up for that learning loss?
Well, excuse me. As a state, we have received well over $7-8 billion in federal pandemic relief funding. And luckily, through the P20 Council, we had developed a learning recovery guide, which provided some strategies, ideas for schools to begin to work on recovery. We also had a strategic plan that the agency had put into play. Actually, it was approved during the pandemic. We had finished it up, and we infused impact of COVID-19, not knowing that it was going to be with us as long as it was. So some of the things that were put into place were grants for school districts to be able to access funding. We had talked about in our strategic plan putting into play six social emotional learning hubs, the seventh being Chicago Public Schools. And we were able to get those social emotional learning hubs up and running very quickly, and schools have been accessing. It provides training for teachers, excuse me, on how to identify where students are really struggling and really needing additional right. supports. It also provided supports for teachers who took advantage of that.
Inequities that were already felt by students became even more apparent during the pandemic. As we start to learn to live with COVID-19, how does the state make sure it continues to address these inequities?
One of the things that I'm very, very proud of is the work on equity across the state throughout the 4 years. And especially with the development and the placement of an equity journey continuum on a district's report card. What that does, the continuum takes a look at the actual data that we collect, and we collect a lot of data, but it organizes it around an equity lens. And it is really opening up more and more conversations around equity, around inequities within our school environments and in our districts. It's also affirming some of the wonderful things that are occurring across the state to address inequities. So I think that that is having a great impact on continuing the work with equity across the state. We're beginning to see some closing of gaps, you know, with the highest graduation rate that we experienced, and much of that really being attributed to our Black and brown students, our Hispanic students. And so that is very exciting work.
Superintendent, it's well known also about the teacher shortage. Let's pivot to that. What must the state do better to address that, as well as finding teachers that actually reflect the racial makeup of schools?
That's another area. It's actually one of our goals on the strategic plan, Elevating Educators. And one of the things that we have already started is our education career pathway grants. So currently, right now, we are preparing more than 10,000 future teachers across high schools in Illinois. This program provides dual credit and early teaching experiences. And so the future educators are really sitting in our classrooms today. And so we are really nurturing that pathway, providing a designation on their diploma that they have completed this pathway, and connecting them to teacher preparation programs. The second thing that we're doing, among other things, is having affinity groups. Now, I've been the only in several areas of my professional journey, and it's kind of lonely and it's difficult. So we've created affinity groups as a retention strategy for our teachers of color in Illinois, as we're gaining more and more teachers, and we hired over 500 right. teachers of color. And so that's exciting, but they need to be supported. And so we have affinity groups. They meet on a regular basis, and it's a network and a support for them.
Right. We are running short on time, but I do want to ask, you know, being yourself a Latina educator and serving a system with many Latino kids, where do you hope to see Illinois education go next to better serve a growing Latino population? And we're very short on time, Superintendent.
I think that the value of language and culture is critical. I'm a bilingual trained teacher, and I think it's invaluable that every single student in the state of Illinois knows more than just English, knows another language, experiences another culture. We're developing our students for the future, for a global society. And so I think that's critical, and providing that and valuing and using the assets that our children bring with respect to their language and culture is something that we need to do more of.
Superintendent, I have to ask this question. We have less than 30 seconds. What are you looking for in retirement?
Rest.
Rest?
I will rest, and then I will refire.
Excellent. I think that's a great plan. Superintendent Ayala, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
This week marks 1 year since the shooting death of 8-year-old Melissa Ortega in Little Village. In that time, the neighborhood has honored her memory with a mural and a peace tree. Little Village Community Council President Baltasar Enriquez says he hopes the tragedy of her death will be a catalyst for the community to get the support he says it needs.
On Sunday, the 1 year anniversary, we began with a prayer. We believe that for some reason the community feels, and I myself feel, that we failed Melissa, and we also failed the shooter. Melissa's 8, the shooter's 16, 8 years apart. So we wanted to pray for our community, because here we know that we have a serious problem. When the aggressor's only 16 years old and he's able to get a gun, he's able to go into the neighborhood and shoot without any remorse, without any conscience. So the children in our neighborhood, is now the result of generation and generation and generation of violence. We have a problem where the community is not only in danger from people suffering with mental health, but also them hurting themselves. So we have seen a spike in homicides in the neighborhood and also suicides. So we're screaming, help, 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 and nobody's helping. We've also planted a peace tree. We also partnered up with Peace Tree organization, and they planted a peace tree to bring peace within the area. And, you know, funny as it sounds, you know, there haven't been any shootings in that area. You know, if people want to come visit the peace tree, pray with it, pray with Melissa, we encourage that. Let Melissa be the anchor of peace and let her image be the image of peace. And hopefully, you know, we could build a better tomorrow for our children.
The mural and peace tree honoring Melissa Ortega are on the northwest corner of Keeler Avenue and 26th Street in Little Village. Back with more Chicago Tonight Latino Voices right after this. You might notice gyms are more packed than usual in January as New Year's resolutions are in full swing. But for some new gym members, this environment can be a daunting experience. Reporter Joanna Hernandez and producer Andrea Flores visited a gym in Waukegan that's taken a different approach to gym culture, aimed at lifting women and reshaping fitness ideals. Let's see.
All right, ready? 1 minute. Let's go.
After leaving the corporate world and having her first child, Maribel Wilson took a chance and opened a gym in Waukegan.
That's why it's so important to me and why I'm so passionate about it is because I pretty much gave up my old life just to have this come true.
Wilson started WWM, a gym that's grown to more than 130 members to serve women of all shapes and sizes.
I hope to instill hope in other women that they can also go out there and feel amazing every single day.
Member Mireya Martinez says this attitude was exactly what she was looking for.
I was starting my, I guess you could call it, weight loss journey, where I was at a place where I was most vulnerable. I didn't have a lot of self-confidence. It wasn't like going to a regular gym where a lot of people are already really, really fit and lifting heavy and wearing crop tops. And I didn't want to be taken in by that. I didn't want to be brainwashed by the image that I needed to be like an Instagram model. No, I need to be myself. And I think that's what Maribel really reinforces in our brains, that you have to be the best you. You don't have to be the best anybody else is.
Psychology professor Jocelyn Carter leads the Healthy Families Lab at DePaul University, studying the fitness industry and its impact on women.
A lot of the media, including social media, in sort of like the fitness, athletic space is largely geared towards white women and has historically been women with a particular body type.
But Carter says there are ways to make exercise and fitness more inclusive by taking a more community-centered approach.
We can get women into gym spaces where it's not just focus on, like, you know, what the weights are and what the different equipment is, but there's some sort of sense of community. Maybe people are learning how to do particular things together and making a connection and having it be more of like a family and community space.
WWM is taking a community approach to fitness by creating events outside of workouts. When not being utilized as a gym, the space is used to host conversations for the community. Past events include discussions about breast cancer, sex, miscarriage, abortion, and infant loss.
I feel like a lot of us have a lot more in common than we think, but sometimes it's not talked about. It's like kind of like therapy as well.
Here has been a space where a lot of us feel super comfortable with one another. I have women here who talk about all types of things. So I feel like this place has become an outlet for how we have grown up.
For Martinez, the goal is no longer to lose weight. It's about much more.
It's not all about the weight loss anymore. It's about meeting new people. It's about being me. It's about finding myself again.
Whether it's a mental or physical workout, members say they are strengthening the bodies they have at times struggled to love.
I want women to feel empowered after leaving WWM. I want them to feel that they can do anything in this world, anything in this life. They can make any changes.
For Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices, I'm Joanna Hernandez.
Well, actually, the gym is not woman exclusive. Men are welcome as well. Some men actually even requested a class where they can feel comfortable starting their new fitness journey. Well, that's going to be our show for this weekend. Be sure to check our website, WTTW.com/news, for the very latest from WTTW News. And don't forget also to tune in to Noticias Univision Chicago every weekday morning. I'll be waiting for you. And now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices, I'm Alex Hernandez. Thank you for sharing part of your weekend with us. Muy buenas noches.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to be a multilingual law firm that provides translators for a variety of languages.